Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. And joining with us today, as many of you are familiar with, Kyle Robinson, an advocate who wears many hats in many areas of which he will be discussing today. Bringing awareness through those who have lived experiences of injustices, incarceration, and releases. We all know the criminal justice system in the United States really needs to be revised, really needs to be reformed. What we have going on in this country is mass incarceration in comparison to prisons all over the world. We are, above all, including China. Now, China is usually on top when it comes to mass populations. But we ourselves have mass incarceration in the United States, even above China. So we're going to be discussing some of these things today, and hopefully Kyle will be joining us very soon. One of the things I want to say is, now there are so many people who have been incarcerated for so many years. It's been 20, 30, 40, even 50 years. There are people incarcerated who have, unfortunately, have terminal illnesses, who have dementia, Parkinson's, who have Alzheimer's, and these are people that should be released. What's out there for them if they are released? And also, those who have served so much time, have turned their lives around while incarcerated, have paid their dues to society, they too deserve to come out. And we have to find ways for them to be able to come out and to be accepted by society, to be included in the communities. So we're going to introduce our guest, as many of you know, as I say, Kyle Robinson, an advocate who wears many hats, and he's going to be talking about some of the things that he does and some of the things that he has done and how he came about doing these things. So, Kyle, are you on with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you?
I'm good, Leona. Great to hear you again.
Good. Listen, I was wondering if you could let the audience know about yourself and a lot of the things that you've been doing, because I know you've been doing graphics, you've been doing, prisoner advocacy, you've been doing outreach, and now you're actually going to be talking about Toastmasters, which I'm excited to hear about because I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, sure. And I am so excited to be talking about it. My name is Kyle Robinson, and I come on the show occasionally because sometimes I can only listen. But I come on often to talk about issues that are relevant to people who are incarcerated because they're people. And I think like many of the advocates, I share this sentiment that human beings are human beings, and there's a base level of or style with which we should treat everyone. And I don't see that being shown to people who are inside. In fact, I see quite the opposite. So today I want to talk about, I want to answer any questions that you have, but generally I want to talk about some of the resources, one in particular that you mentioned, Toastmasters, a resource that I found to be critical to my reintegration. And I'm open to talk about that, but I've got a little even more important news to build on, and that is I'm going to save it. But, yeah, I'd love to talk about Toastmasters, and I don't know if you have questions you want to ask me or if you want me to just go into it and kind of give you a summary of notes.
I would first like to let the audience know, if any one of you would like to call in, give feedback, ask questions, or whatever the case may be, the call-in number is 657-383-1630. Again, 657-383-1630. Feel free to call in. Kyle's ready for any questions, and I'm ready for any feedback. So please call in if you feel you want to, or if you just want to listen in, that's fine. But at least try to call in and learn more about these things. You can ask questions. As I say, Kyle wears many hats in many areas. He's been an advocate, and he has resources to talk about. So, Kyle, I'm not going to ask you questions. What I'd like to do is to ask a question on Toastmasters. Now, you mentioned Toastmasters as a resource for returning citizens. So can you just talk a little bit about Toastmasters, how it came about, and how it is a resource for returning citizens?
So Toastmasters has been around for 100 years this year. It is a global nonprofit, and easily the best comprehensive set of tools that you can give someone if they're a returning citizen. I think even if they're not a returning citizen, they can benefit from Toastmasters, but particularly returning citizens. And here's why. A lot of us leave prison without the skills to get a job, to communicate effectively. A lot of us don't have those skills when we get there, and a lot of us lose them over time just due to the trauma that is being incarcerated. So this Toastmasters project that's 100 years old is specifically designed to help you become a better communicator and leader. At its core, those two things, communicator and leader. Well, how does it do that? So I'll tell you, they use a method called pathways. Pathways is a variety of options or paths of which you choose one or more. And it is a curriculum that has five levels. Everyone starts with their icebreaker speech. That's the first speech on any path. And that's 4 to 6 minute introduction of yourself. Why do they do that? Well, it's to, one, let the group get to know you, and also because most people are their best subject, and they know themselves best. So it's a great place to start if you're not comfortable speaking in front of a group. And after you get finished with that first speech, you check that box off of your to-do list, if you will. And then you go on to the next. And there's two or three on each level. Well, as you get up to level 4 or 5, your speeches become more like projects, speech projects. For example, the path that I'm on is persuasive influence. I want to influence people. I want to be persuasive in how I do it. And one of the options that I might have on level 4, the level that I'm working right now, is to do a podcast. It may be to facilitate a monthly or weekly discussion. I choose, but there's something that I'm doing that's going to require me not only to speak, but to organize. Why is that important? Leon, I don't know if I ever said this on the show. I hate to say it at all, but it's a reality that most people who are returning home from prison, 90% of the ones that I know, do not have the technical skills or the computer skills to do the things that they want to do online.
Exactly.
Well, these projects, level 4 and level 5, you're going to naturally have to come into contact with those programs. And you also have to, you've got mentors in the club, but you're working with other people. There's always someone to help you. So it's not like you're going to, fail. It's a self-paced program. But you will come in contact with these tools. I probably told you before that 2 years ago I couldn't send an email. The whole time I was out of prison, I didn't have a need, or I wasn't introduced to a need to use things like Google Docs or to even check my email bag. I didn't see computers then. Didn't go around them. But what happened about 2 years ago was I started getting interested in developing as a speaker, and thus Toastmasters. I hope that answered your question.
You know, it kind of like it did, but it seems like there's so much more to it. It's so much.
Yes, yes.
And also, you mentioned in the beginning that it's not just for those coming out of prison. So is this open to others as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. It is open to everybody. There's over 100,000 clubs worldwide. It's one of the largest nonprofits in the world. But I know in the district 117 that I just transferred from, there's countless clubs there. You won't go in a state without finding Toastmasters. You probably won't go into a city without finding Toastmasters. And they come, if you want to visit the website to get a bit more graphic overview of it, it's toastmasters.org. And what you'll see is that there's information on how to start a club if you want one, if you want to, or how to join a club, or even just look for a club. So what I didn't get around to mentioning is that last year, when I was setting my goals for the year, I had one that was very, very specific. So a Toastmasters club can be seen. And I know one of the clubs I started visiting was in Michigan, and it was a corporate club for people who were employees of this organization. I wasn't an employee, but they welcomed me just like anyone else. And when I saw that, I was like, corporate clubs? What does that mean? And they explained to me why some of them are themed, and you know, that's an option. And then if you know me, you know where my head went, how can this serve people who are, you know, incarcerated or coming home? And I decided that I wanted to start a club that was reentry focused. Because when I came to Toastmasters, though I had the floor to learn about and say anything, I still understood that I wasn't I wasn't comfortable. The method is not one that a lot of people are already familiar with. So, because it is a good program, I was able to go through it or stay in it. But I knew that there needed to be something for others, and I started reaching out to people across the country who were involved with Toastmasters, or who had a link between them being a Toastmaster and something about anything about incarceration. You've got a couple of people who've done TED Talks who are formerly incarcerated who mentioned Toastmasters as a big part of their staying out. Well, out of these people who I connected with around the country, one person told me, he said, you know, somebody else I know has an idea about that, an idea just like that. And he goes on to tell me some stuff I didn't know. Did you know they have Toastmasters clubs in some prisons? It's only two or three of them. Well, it's between three and five, actually, something like that. Toastmasters clubs in prison. And they have somebody on the outside who comes in and, you know, helps facilitate them. But they're structured. The people hold roles. So the guy's telling me about this, and he tells me this one guy has an idea to start a club about reentry, but that guy's not going to get out until, you know, January of 2024. Well, lo and behold, I get a call in February of 2024 from that same guy. And he says, remember that talk we had last year? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, the guy's gotten out, and he's following through with it. Do you want to be a part? I was like, sure, yeah. And I asked him, are y'all meeting online virtually? And he said, yes, we're meeting online and in person. And I said, where are you located? He said, Portland, Oregon. You know, I just moved to Portland, Oregon in November. I had beautiful coincidence. I went Sunday to their meeting, and I checked it out, and I was really, really impressed with some of the support I saw. And, so I took a role and was voted in as the media person. And I am really, really excited. It feels like one of the most important projects I've been a part of. I'd like to tell you why, but I want to make space for you to share too, because I know I'm talking quite a bit. But I want to share with you at some point in this call a very personal story that kind of illustrates why it's so important to me that this club now exists.
So will you be sharing it now?
I can.
Please, I'm interested, and I'm sure the audience is interested, keeping us in suspense.
Okay. I think it was July of 2022. Now, I'm living in Vermont, a little town called Putney, Vermont. And when I tell you it's in the middle of nowhere, I'm not exaggerating. We had bears that would come in the garage, chill on the porch. Like, it's out there, right? And I'm there because I've lost the place in New York. So, you know, my housing insecurity has been with me since I got out. And even here 15 years after, it was still with me. Well, I have a friend who allows me to come and move in with her. She's an executive director of a nonprofit up there. And she's teaching me some, you know, basic administrative stuff. Well, one day she comes to me, and it's a weekend, so we're not working. She comes to me on the weekend, and she's holding her computer, and she says, "Kyle." And she just froze. And I look at the screen, and what I see is an ad or a post. It's in this little group or community of Putney, Vermont, that this post has been placed. And it says, "Wanted for first-degree murder by the U.S. Marshals." And my heart just dropped because the person on there looked literally just like me.
Ooh.
And we out here in Mayberry. So, you know, there's not any or definitely not many people of color out here. I know that I stand out very well. I have dreads, and I'm black, and I know where we are. There's not another me. Well, they're looking for this guy in this area. And where does my mind go? First, I panic. I'm not going to lie. I panic. I know that I haven't done anything, and I also know that doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know, in the legal system. So I start thinking, do I need to try to call a lawyer? Do I need to call my mama? Do I need to run? What do I do? And I thought back to being incarcerated, you know, for the time I was, and I decided to get in the shower because the absence of that luxury was one that I didn't want to experience any sooner than I had to. So I get in the shower, and I get out, and my friend Julie is, you know, trying to get in contact with the people who put the post up, trying to have them take it down, because in my mind, her neighbors have likely already seen this and said, "Oh, you know what? That looks like that guy that's staying with Julie."
I can imagine.
I've taken it to the bank in my head. I've taken it to the bank, and I'm thinking, okay, they'll be here within 15 minutes max. How do I want to present myself? How do I want to engage? But they're definitely coming because there's just no way in a town like this the word doesn't spread. Well, when I get out of the shower, Julie comes and tells me that she got in touch with the people who put the post up and that this guy had actually been captured a week prior. Now, there was a type of relief, but the mode that my mind went in when I panicked, when I knew that I'm about to have to engage law enforcement, and they already know, or they already have a record of me, so they're already going to be heavily armed or heavily defensive, and, you know, this is a murder warrant. My mind is, I've come unglued, totally unglued. And when she told me that, you know, not to worry, it's been resolved, my mind did not come back glued. I cried so hard. And the police weren't coming. They were never coming. And now I knew they weren't coming, and now I start crying like I hadn't cried probably ever. Well, I stayed in that mind state, that PTSD, for about a month. And I had a friend up your way near Massachusetts who kind of helped me to come out of it after a couple of weeks. But I say that to tell you to fast forward a year later, mid-2023. I have a roommate. I'm back in New York, and I have a roommate who unfortunately took his life. Now, the way that he took his life wasn't especially clear, but he left a note. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this friend. They're in a very upscale neighborhood in New York, somewhere where I definitely probably wouldn't be at that time, you know, without knowing them. And it's a part of New York City. It's kind of the West Village, just the neighborhood. And it's one of the few areas in New York where you can still walk for 5 or 10 blocks and not see a person of color. It's a somewhat exclusive neighborhood just by price. And when my roommate died, so the police are here now. Police are here. It's not like a year ago when I thought they were coming and I freaked out. They're here. Paramedics are here. Neighbors are in the house here. You know, everyone's trying to figure out what happened. And I was not at any point afraid or concerned that I was going to be incarcerated, though I knew I was obviously under suspicion. And the difference in that reaction, I'm freaking out because I thought they were coming 1 year. I thought I'm going to have to talk to them. The next year, here, come on. The confidence.
You mentioned that your roommate died?
Yes. Yes, he took his life.
Oh, no.
Yes, yeah, so that's what the reason that I ended up moving in November, because he owned the place. It wasn't my place. So when he passed, that kind of restarted or reset the housing instability part of my life. But he was a great friend who was, because of my housing instability, trying his best to, you know, provide me somewhere safe to stay. And
Kyle, were you ever diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder?
No.
Oh, okay. So he was helping you with the living arrangements?
Yes, correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't clinically diagnosed for PTSD. I was advised that I have it by someone whose judgment I trust very well. But it was kind of a guru, to be honest with you. I got this friend, guy in his 70s, who I met doing some social organizing. And he spotted some characteristics that I had that I totally wasn't aware of, but characteristics that had been plaguing my social life for the whole time I had been out. Sometimes I talk about, you know, how what an interview is like and what the interviewer doesn't know about the person who's just gotten out of prison, or what the family member or that romantic partner doesn't know. There's no book yet for how to reenter society, but you're taking a fish out of water and you're putting them in the woods, they're going to have to, it's going to take some time and experience to get acclimated. You know, mm-hmm. Well, this person, this friend of mine, kind of helped me to become aware of some, first he helped me gain some therapeutic self-insight, but then basic practices like meditation and the sort to help one contain these PTSD symptoms so that I, you know, didn't do anything destructive or harmful to myself or someone else. And that is really one of the huge parts of my reentry, was having someone, a mentor, to show me those things that I couldn't see, because it took some time to build that up. He had to have some trust for me, and vice versa. It was an old white guy. He definitely had to both come a little bit out of our worlds, and that's exactly what happened with Toastmasters as well. It came a little bit out of my world and into this world, where I got mentors, I got tools, and I had a program. So I can tell you, the difference between those two stories that are in your part was a confidence that you cannot give someone. You can't steal it. It's something that people can earn for themselves, and you can guide them, you know, through it. But it literally makes the difference in how I react in the most critical situations. Because, you know, society, I'm sorry, that was a good time.
What I was going to say is, as you said before, you mentioned this too. You know, people go into prison when they're getting ready to come out, they don't know what they're doing. They don't have any experience in computers. You know, there's a lot of things that are new to them, especially if they've been in for a long time. Now, I don't know if you've heard of Criminon International, but that's another one. It sounds to me like it's something similar to Masters. The only thing is, Criminon International helps those inside before they come out. It helps them to prepare to come out. Now, you're talking about Toastmasters as a resource for returning citizens to enhance their knowledge and education to go out there and pretty much do a lot of things on their own. There's just that little thing in between the Criminon International preparing them to come out and Toastmaster getting them prepared to go out into the world to use their skills and use what they learn through Toastmasters. The one problem I see in this country, though, is a lot of the problems is when they come out, they don't have a place to go. And that's what's missing between these two entities. But these two programs, Criminon International and Toastmasters, those two programs are awesome. They are so awesome because they're rehabilitated through Criminon International inside, and then when they come out, they're getting further in education and being able to go into the world and speak and do all of these additional things.
Yes, it is. I mean, and like I said, it's an invaluable resource, but only if people use it and only if they know about it. So this club is the first of that type, and I'm really proud to be a member of it and to be telling you about it today, because I know firsthand how needed it is. I hate when it turns my stomach when I see people get looked over for opportunities, or worse, self-sabotage their opportunities because they don't have other just basic training, basic options that most people, you know, out here do. So to know that reentry is a multifaceted challenge, socially, with housing, psychologically, on so many different levels, I'm really glad that Toastmasters isn't just a speaking tool. It's most importantly, this is a benefit that I didn't know about or expect. So I'm gonna tell you a little bit more about the Toastmasters meeting. but I want to explain why it's as much of a listening enhancer as it is a speaking enhancer. So Toastmasters meetings have three parts. This is universal. They have a section in which people give prepared speeches. Let's say, Liana, you've got a specific guest you want to interview, and you're not totally confident about it, but you want to practice. Well, at your club meeting, you could say, hey, y'all, I want to give this speech. This is what it's about. This is why I'm doing it, and I need some feedback. Now, they're gonna give you feedback whether you ask for it or not, because it's Toastmasters. It's a staple of them. And another benefit as well is that they help you get good at accepting feedback. But you have the prepared speeches. You have a section called table topics. And this is where everyone, even guests, can take a shot at it. But you have 2 minutes to speak about a topic, and you don't know what that topic is going to be, right? The topics, the table topics lead or guide will present a prompt to you, and you will speak for 1 to 2 minutes, and after that 1 to 2 minutes, you'll get feedback. Why is this important? Well, this type of speaking, impromptu speaking, is the type of speaking that we do most of. It's your boss asks you a question. Your daughter calls you from school and says anything. It's any interaction that you were not expecting to have, and you have to speak off the cuff or off the hip, if you will. That was the actual exercise that I think made the biggest difference for me, because once you are speaking in front of people at a speaking organization, you instantly become aware of things you were not aware of about how you speak. If you've ever, or I know when I watch myself on camera the first time, or listen to myself on audio, I was like, "Who was that? He's trash." I had no idea for maybe 15 years, but everybody else who's listening to me may be thinking the same thing.
I did.
I cannot.
I have to say, years ago, I was at Cape Cod Community College. I was going to Cape Cod Community College. And the professor wanted us to write something on the most things that we're fearful of. And mine was on public speaking. So when it came time to do the presentation, she gave me that assignment to talk about public speaking, and one of the other students, like you, had a gift for art. So he drew a picture of a woman speaking, and he had all these things around her, making like she was really afraid, shaken, and everything else. So I used that as the tool during my presentation to talk about public speaking. But it was good for me because throughout the years, I started to do a little bit more until I became so confident that I do the impromptu all the time, and you're doing it right now. And this is so important because when we watch our legislative members, when we watch our government leaders speaking, like our president, they always are looking at a script. But we are able to speak from the heart and from the mind and from the soul. And that's what I benefited from. And having to be forced to do a presentation on the very thing I feared most, and that's getting before a large audience and speaking. It really is amazing.
Yes, practice is so valuable, and it is the secret weapon. There's no excuse for, there's no replacement for practice, I should say. But again, one of the reasons that the Toastmasters thing is so useful, I think, is that it puts in front of you the challenges or tasks that are going to require you to practice. And because it's self-paced, nobody's ever going to be calling you, bugging you, like, you know, why haven't you done this? Why are you? It's literally come as you will, take as much as you can. I would love to get the numbers on how many people are part of it in the U.S. right now, but it's something that when I got in, I noticed because the world was virtual, it had just started going virtual, and I was hopping online, going to different places and checking out their meetings. What I found and saw was that a lot of people, even within the organization, they didn't have a message. It's like there are a lot of people who are in this program that gives you the opportunities to speak and to develop and to be the kind of speaker you want to be, but a lot of people didn't want to speak. And I was like, what is this? Are they nervous? Do they just not have anything? And of course, this isn't everybody, but I remember back then thinking, oh, I'm going to have some fun with this because I got a lot to say. And, you know, I was already in the phase of everything that I do connecting to incarceration. And the seed was planted very early. And as of this last Sunday, I can now say that I've seen it come into fruition. And I did not create this club. I joined and was voted the vice president of the public relations last Sunday. The guy who started it, who founded it, just got out in I believe January, and he gave his first speech at the event on Sunday, and it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful because he understands, because he's been in Toastmasters on the inside, he understands how big of a tool it is now to his networking and to his career development.
You had me curious.
And I understand.
You had me curious, and I just went on the internet. It says, it is through this regular practice that members are empowered to meet personal and professional communication goals. Founded in 1924, the organization is headquartered in Englewood, Colorado, with approximately 270,000 members and more than 14,200 clubs in 148 countries. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all over the place. And you cannot overstate the value. And apparently hundreds of thousands of people are experiencing it. But 100 years ago, and I was doing some research to see, I would look in Toastmasters history and see, you know, what were they doing around year 50? What was happening at the quarter, what happened in their 25th year? What happened at their 75th year? Nothing I found was as monumental as I believe this impact can be.
It says in California, headquarters in Rancho Santa Margarita, California, the organization's membership exceeds 345,000 and more than 15,900. Wow, I get it.
There's a lecture by this guy. I can't remember his name, but he was a professor at MIT. And he comes out and he gives a brilliant presentation on the same stuff that you talk about in Toastmasters or you learn in Toastmasters. And the thing that he said that stuck with me the most, he drew in parentheses, it looked like one of those algebraic expressions that I can't understand. They drew a big T and a small K or an I, and then a little T. And he comes in and he explains what that is. He says, this equation will influence the quality of your life more than anything else. The big T is for how you talk, how you speak. Next is what you know. Next is your talent. And I remember he said very conclusively, in that order. When he first said it, I was like, are you sure? Are you telling me the way that I speak, the way that I present myself, means more to my future than the information in my head? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. If you look at
it's not hard to find an organization where there is a very charismatic leader who knows less than half of what his staff knows or their staff knows. People trust certain qualities, and those qualities are what you can develop and learn and become conscious of while you're in Toastmasters. But more importantly, you get to use them out in the world. There's a speech contest that came in first place about 3 weeks ago, and I'm telling this story about something that happened to me when I first moved to Portland. Can I tell you about it?
Please.
Okay. To give you a little bit of context, I'm from Tennessee, and I moved to New York a few years back. And when I moved to New York, or when I said I was going to move to New York, everybody was counseling me against it. My parents were like, it's so dangerous up there. It's so much crime. Don't look anybody in the eye. Stay to yourself. I'm like, Mom, it's New York. It ain't Death Row, right? Well, I moved to New York. It was like Death Row, Liana. It was wild. I get on the subway, and I'm new there. I'm getting lost. I'm on there seeing all type of stuff. I don't know if I need to go into detail about it. But there was this one situation in particular that I didn't know how to handle. There was a tension between this couple, and we're on the subway, and there's like 15, 20 people between us, so no one notices me. But I'm looking over because I hear them arguing, and I see some shoving, and there's like all these people between us, and nobody's even looking up. They're not even batting an eye. So I'm learning, oh, this is how you behave in New York, is it? And we get to the next stop, and the lady's trying to get off, and the guy grabs her arm and snatches it back down. So now she can't leave. So something just changed about the nature of the situation to me, where before I was unsure, now I know that someone needs to speak up, someone needs to do something. But I don't know, if I speak up, am I going to say something stupid? Am I going to be laughed at? The police going to show up and then they take me to jail for just because there's an hour left before they get off and they don't want to search the details? I don't know. So I, over time, I've gotten used to not speaking up when I needed it. And when I moved to Portland here in November, the first night that I rode the bus at nighttime, I get on there, and I'm sitting right behind the bus driver on the opposite side. And this guy gets on the bus, and he sits across from me, and we're riding a couple stops. Now, from the moment that he first gets on, the guy will not stop moving. I noticed that about him. He's real, real fidgety. He looked like he could have been my uncle. He had this long, long gray trench coat on, and he looked like he could have had an Office Depot in his pockets. But he just kept fidgeting, and that's none of my business. I'm not trying to make you suspicious of him, but I'm just gonna call him Shifty Steve for this scenario I'm about to tell you about. Shifty Steve. Well, Shifty Steve, after a couple of stops, gets up and goes to another seat towards the back. And Shifty Steve looked like he had one thing on his mind, by the way. It was not rehab. Like, it was, he looked like he had been down through there. And if that sounds a little insensitive, then you're probably picturing the right guy. So Shifty Steve then went back there and sat down, and these two other people get on the bus. It's a man and a woman, and they sit right at the middle where the seats start facing forward, and they're sitting on opposite sides. Well, I guess if the lady is putting her bag down, when you're on a public transportation, I guess any kind, when you put your bag down and you're sitting down, you kind of look around and scan and whatnot and just, take it in. Well, I guess in the middle of her scan, she makes eye contact with Shifty Steve and perceives him to say something that she didn't like and responds. And Shifty Steve says, he said something that ended in a profanity. It sounded like he called her the B word. He did say the B word, but I didn't, you know, jump up and clarify it because I didn't want you to be on the news like, that was the last time I talked to Kyle alive. I just kept my mouth shut. But after two or three rounds of this back and forth, don't call me no thief. What are you doing? Crazy. Don't you talk to me like this. Then I hear something that you really don't want to hear in that situation from the other guy who had gotten on the bus that I'm not even thinking is related to the situation. He says, why do you keep calling my wife a bee? Oh, shoot. Now, you know, I'm at the front thinking, man, I'm glad I'm not in this. I'm glad that's not me. I'm looking forward. I'm trying to ignore that. And this, sometimes we do that when things are happening around us that you know, need to de-escalate or someone needs to speak up. One version of me is a survivor. He just wants to get home. He ain't trying to, he got, you know, things that people are counting on him to do, and he wants to just get those done. He's not trying to save the world. He's not trying to, definitely not trying to, you know, be a cop. So he sometimes plays small. He'll keep his mouth closed when he needs to be a disruptor. Well, when the guy says that, you know, what are you doing talking to my wife like that? Now the conversation, this argument has shifted to the guy and Shifty Steve going back and forth. And so it's the tone is up a little bit. And as I'm listening to them go back and forth, they're not hearing each other at all. They're barking over each other, repeating the same stuff over and over and over. And they look like fools. They look like fools. And I thought, well, it's not going to be serious. Ain't nobody going to do nothing. And by the way, I'm way past my stop. I'm so lost. This is what happens when you ride at night and you don't know your first time in the city. We're way past my stop. And anyways, next thing I hear that pulls me, you know, back into this, pulls my attention back to it, I hear, what are you reaching for? Now I'm totally paying attention. I'm all the way paying attention. I'm invested because, if something's about to, like that is about to happen, I'm jumping out a window. I'm getting behind a bus driver, or climbing up there in that little shielded thing. I gotta make a move. And yeah, he says, what are you reaching for? Why do you keep going in your bag? Do you got a gun? And I thought about it right then in that moment, Liana. All of this, the Toastmaster stuff, the table topics, all this, the practice impromptu speaking and all that, I didn't do that to sit around and do it in a club with my friends and my buddies. I did it because I have things to say in the world, and that's something that we can lose track of and forget. I stood up very calmly, and I got everyone's attention when I screamed out, hey! And I know as a speaker, and it didn't have nearly that much voice in it. It was like, hey! That's what it felt like. You know, everybody turned around and was looking at me. But I didn't have a speech prepared. I had to speak off the cuff right then. And I said something to the effect of, as a stranger who's just trying to get home tonight, I know that phrase is an arresting phrase. You have to want to hear what I'm going to say next, especially in that situation. And I strategically talked through the situation to help everyone get the point. Nobody needs to get shot or go to jail tonight just because they couldn't walk away from a conflict with a stranger. Does this make sense? And They got it. And I was talking about the longest 3 seconds of my life, man. They got it.
And now, how long were you in New York before all of this happened?
Maybe 4 years, three or four years.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, going into the city like that, I'm not a city person. I've never been a city person. I get anxiety going to Boston. I couldn't survive in New York. I just couldn't deal with it. Boston is bad enough.
Yeah.
But one of the things is when I get into the city, I'm completely lost, but I'm also anxious because there's so much crime that goes on in the cities. And here you're kind of like de-escalating something that's getting ready to escalate. So that's why I was wondering how long you were living there.
Yeah, now this was actually in Portland. This was when I left New York in November, this last Thanksgiving, and moved to Portland. So you're right. One needs to be very thoughtful and deliberate anytime you step into, you know, a dispute that looks like it's escalating.
Mm-hmm.
But I, unfortunately, because we live in a type of society that we do, I know I look the part. I know I can get away with some things that some other people can't do. I probably wouldn't have done that in every situation, but it made sense in my head to, particularly because I knew I listened enough to know that these two men did not want to fight. They had what's called an amygdala hijack, where they're literally up there arguing out of fear. They just wanted to stop, but they can't say that. You know how men can be with their egos and their pride when there's an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So I go sit down in my seat, and Shifty Steve starts, you know, he starts walking up to the front of the bus. For a second, I thought, oh, shoot, he's about to see. This is how I'm going to die. But he actually came up and he said, thanks, young blood. I don't know what I was thinking about there, man. It just got out of hand. And it was crazy. That was wild, but thanks for saying something. And when I got off the bus at the wrong stop, I remember my chest was out so high. So I was so proud. Something in me was different. And what it was I had the experience of seeing my voice, my willingness to speak up in a situation actually help somebody in real time that night. And I remember feeling like I'm never going to play small again, you know, if I can help someone. And so I don't want to sound like braggadocious about it, but everybody has power in their voice. You know, we come on here because we're trying to get people to use their voice, because we know that's what it's going to take to see a change in, reform to incarceration practices.
Mm-hmm.
But that night I got so much confidence instilled in me that wait till the next time I'm on a bus, I'm gonna be looking for trouble. You might see me on the news. Like, this guy is he calls himself the de-escalator. No, I'm not looking for anything, but I'll never forget what it felt like to know that all of the value of this practice that I did in Toastmasters could contribute in the real world, and I want to keep that going. And I know I took a long time on that part of the breakdown, but the third part of the meetings is evaluations, in which it's just what it sounds like. There's an evaluator for everything. And even when you're evaluating somebody, that is a speech that, you're encouraged to evaluate. So that's the way Toastmasters meetings go: prepared speeches, impromptu speaking, evaluation. And that is within those practices comes the set of tools and disciplines that I know. Empower people to stay employed, to interact socially better. And I can't wait till some studies come out about the recidivism rate of returning citizens who are in Toastmasters. I bet it's going to be under 5%. Might be zero, I don't know. But I guarantee you it's not going to look anything like recidivism rates do in general. And I'm very sure about, and that's also something that forces me to want to be a part.
of this project. If people want to be a part of this project, then I would love to help them get there. I'd love to direct anyone to that. So we meet on Sundays at 1:30 Pacific time, and that's 4:30 Eastern time. If you want a link to that meeting, if you want to visit and check it out and see what it's about, see how it's how it works, you're totally welcome to. And just email me and request access to the Toastmasters meeting on Sunday, and I'll shoot it to you. You can email me at rrashad1986@gmail.com. That's rrashad1986@gmail.com. And just request access to the Toastmasters meeting, and I'll shoot you the link.
And what time did you say that was as well?
1:30 on Sundays. 1:30 my time. I'm on the Pacific Coast, so it will be 4:30 in the Eastern time zone. And I'm just saying that for anybody who's listening, shoot me a message or an email saying that you need access to the meeting, and I'll be happy to get you a link. And hopefully, you'll benefit. Anyone who comes to a meeting benefits. But yeah, that's what I wanted. That's what I was excited about and wanted to share with you today. Can I ask you for your thoughts in response?
You know, I'm open to anything that's going to help improve the lives of others, mainly those coming out of prison. My passion is with the incarcerated and in prison reform and everything. And as I say, the more resources out there for these people that are coming out, the better it is. And a lot of these people come out with, like you say, no experience in a lot of these things. We see changes occurring pretty much every week. So I can understand people that have been in for 20 years, 30 years, coming out with the changes that they would have to encounter. So programs like this, I think, would be very helpful to them. It would give them some sort of control and some sense of comfort and not feeling alone because they're getting guided through this process that you're talking about. So I think that it's an awesome program. It's something that is needed, and I just wish that these people that run these kind of programs would go into the prisons, would, you know, talk to these incarcerated individuals, especially those that are soon to be released.
I agree.
The Department of Corrections, they prevent the media from going in. They prevent a lot of these beneficial, valuable programs, you know, people from coming in and giving these incarcerated individuals some kind of hope that, you know, if they're coming out, they know who to contact, they know where to go, they know what to expect. And a lot of this would prevent such a high recidivism rate, as you mentioned.
When people can express themselves clearly and communicate with empathy, absolutely, the amount of conflicts drops so vastly. But, you know, the DOC doesn't want the secret to get out, and that will happen if they allow people to come in there and see that these people that we've got warehoused in prisons are human beings. They want you to think, in many cases, they want you to think that we are one chromosome away from being werewolves, and we're looking to harm the first thing we see, which is why the crimes that you hear about anytime you're watching a show where they take you into prison, they always highlight the most offensive crimes, murder, rape, because these more terrifying crimes, once you start fear mongering, then you start forgetting that, hold on, this is only a tiny percent of the population. Never mind that half of them probably are not guilty or that there's more to the story, but they don't want that secret to get out. And
if you are in that situation, if you make it out of prison and you get out, there's nothing like not having the capacity or the skills or the speaking ability to share that message, because you know it, you've seen it. And mm-hmm. for 15 years, I couldn't express that message, and it drove me crazy. I have no problem expressing it today, and I think that's I can clearly link that to my experience with Toastmasters.
It is awesome. That is really awesome. So, Kyle, once again, give the audience your contact information and the information.
Okay.
I hope you'll let me
come back and tell you how it's going, because this is brand new. Okay. I will definitely be back on in to report how it's going. So I'm Kyle Robinson, and I'm a member of Beyond the Wall Toastmasters. That's the name of the club, Beyond the Wall Toastmasters. And you can find them online, or you can email me for a link, and I'm happy to send you a link. The meetings are Sundays at 1:30 Pacific time. That's 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. And my email is rrashad, that's RRASHAD. The number is 1986 @gmail.com. And I will be happy to connect you. And I look forward to coming back and reporting on how it's going, what milestones have been made by some of the participants, and hopefully encouraging other people to get involved and to create these clubs in your area.
Okay, and Kyle, I would like to have you also let the audience know, you, as I mentioned, you wear many hats in different areas. I wanted to ask you if you could...
One second. Sorry, I had a knock at the door. I'm listening.
Real quick.
I'm listening.
I'm gonna let you go because we're running over the hour. But the graphic design and things like that you have done, I don't know if you are ready to talk about that as well, but if you are still doing that, if you can just briefly, you know, let the audience know about that as well.
Definitely. Thank you for reminding me, too. So I was not into, graphic design. I wasn't into anything on computers, but I ended up having to start learning some of this stuff, partially because I was in Toastmasters and partially because I'm an advocate. Like, sometimes people need a hand with something, and there's no one else to do the job, and you mess around and learn how to do it along the way. So I got good at graphic design and editing, and video editing, and I have always used that pretty specifically to help people who are incarcerated, because I'm overwhelmed with stuff to do in those scenarios. People need social media, even most people are denied social media, obviously, but if you can have social media, or you can get somebody on the outside like me to access it for you, then you can have a hope of starting to build a campaign or some support. There's nothing like not being able to represent yourself online in these days. So, yeah, that's what I do. I help people have a digital life from prison, and I also am happy to help, you know, any advocates or anyone who needs those services with your projects. And you can contact me at the same email address, rrashad1986@gmail.com.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor having you on, as always. So, audience, Kyle Robinson is a Toastmaster representative and also a graphic designer. I want to thank you for coming on, Kyle, and I want to thank you for all the services, all the information you share. You're a valuable tribute to all of us, and I thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Liana. I can't wait to see you again. Take care.
Audience, we are now going to end this episode, and we will have Kyle Robinson back on with us. In the meantime, I hope everyone enjoys their evening, and try to get on Sunday to hear what they have to say. Kyle has given you all the information, and I hope you'll take advantage of it. So So thank you all for listening in, and we are now going to end this episode. Thank you.